And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of April 30th, 2020. Today, we're pleased to be joined by our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm doing well. How are you?
And I am thoroughly tickled, as my mother used to say, tickled pink, to have joining us today Mr. D.R. Tucker, our longtime friend, former co-host, and continuous research guy. D.R., how are you doing?
Pretty ticked off based on what we're going to discuss.
There you go. I'm so happy that you're able to come back and join with us, because I think your insight on this this topic is very useful as a student of media stuff. But so let me set up this discussion, right? A guy named Michael Moore. I don't know. You ever heard of Michael Moore, either of you guys?
Not
Michael Moore made a movie called Bowling for Columbine, which played to great critical success. Which was about the Columbine shootings in 1998. He made a movie called Fahrenheit something. But anyways, it was about Fahrenheit 9/11, right? About the Bushes. He has done several movies about Trump. Generally speaking, historically, he has been a progressive voice in a lot of issues. However, recently, he released a movie. You may have heard of it. It's called Planet of the Humans. It was released onto YouTube on Earth Day for free viewing, which, okay, is all by itself. But it's a Michael Moore documentary. It carries all the gravitas that Michael Moore has from his 20 years of making movies about stuff. But this movie, The Planet of the Apes, Planet of the Humans, is such a funhouse mirror distortion of reality because it attacks renewable energies. It tries to portray climate activists as being shills for capitalism and completely bought and sold. And that basically all of us, all of you, dear listeners, everyone who's been working on this topic is basically a hypocrite, and worse than a hypocrite is just making money off this deal. There are so many points in this movie to discuss. I'm not even sure where to begin. And what I'm going to do is it's like the, remember the quiz show, high school quiz show, where you have to see who could raise their hand fastest to answer, to take the first question, because I know my two interlocutors here, both DR and Mariah, would love to say something, but let's see. I'm going to pick, this is like The Voice. DR, tell me, let's start with you. What did you think of this movie?
Well, to clarify about this filth, first of all, it's
that was filth, not film. I like it.
Yeah, Michael Moore he's credited as executive producer. The credited director is a fellow by the name of Jeff Gibbs, who used to be a producer and composer on his films. But the stylistic similarities between this and Moore's films are so close that you naturally have to wonder if there's a certain sort of poltergeist thing going on, if you're familiar with the controversy surrounding who is the actual director of that particular film. The best way to summarize this moral rot is that, to use the famous line from Mary McCarthy, everything in the film is a lie, including and the. It is the most sustained and false and deceptive attack on clean energy and climate activism going all the way. You'd have to literally go back to the Michael Crichton novel State of Fear to see this assortment of blatant lies about the reliability of clean energy, about the integrity of climate activists. It is nothing more than just an hour and 40 minutes of basically a declaration that there is no solution to the climate crisis, that the only solution is basically mass death on a profound scale, and that everybody involved in the climate movement or everybody involved in the clean energy movement is either woefully naive or woefully corrupt. The film I think it's fair to call it a racist film in the sense that it's against the human race, basically.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I mean, I guess we owe the people in the audience who have not seen this movie, and my dear listener, if you do watch it, you'll be dumber when you get done than when you start, so don't even bother.
Don't go see it. Don't support it.
But the movie starts out literally with an attack on the renewable energy industry, accuses it of using more fossil fuels than in the construction of the solar panels and the wind turbines than it produces over the life. It goes to a place, to various failed renewable energy systems, and then it moves on to talk about electric vehicles and says, oh, the electric vehicles are dirty because they use coal to make the electricity, and they show a solar panel which has 8% efficiency. And, of course, that film, that clip comes from 29 or 2010. And, again, people should know that solar panels, a standard silicon solar panel has a maximum efficiency of converting sunlight to electricity of 30%. That's just physics. All you can do is convert 30% of the sunlight into electricity for reasons you can study if you want. These things in the movie in 2010 were 8% efficient, and Moore's movie damns the whole industry because of that, ignoring the fact that today, in the 10 years, we've gone from 8% to 23% efficiency, and we're moving up that curve to the full theoretical efficiency. Then it goes on, and it says renewable energies are exploiting the Andes and Africa for precious metals. Isn't that terrible? And then it goes on and talks about, it's just like switches and says, oh, we're all going to die because there's too many people on the planet. And this, as you say, this white privileged white guy talks about how, oh, we need to have fewer people, ignoring the fact that the people that are doing all the damage that live in America are not, we're not reproducing very fast. All of a sudden you say, whose population is going to get controlled? And then they march on and go for this long discussion of biomass and somehow try to say that every climate activist loves to chop down trees, clear cut trees, and burn, and isn't it hypocrisy? And in particular, they go after Bill McKibben. And then after that, the guy goes into some doctor's professor's office and starts talking about his fear of death and humans' fear of death, and that's why we believe in renewable energy. I mean, it really is this discordant thing, and then it finally ends up trying to do a character assassination against Bill McKibben to say that he is a stooge of rich people.
I can't even. Bill McKibben, besides the two of you, Bill McKibben has to be like the nicest climate activist out there, right? And like he has dropped everything in his life to devote it to keeping the parts per million of carbon in the atmosphere below 350 degrees. I mean, this man has given himself over to this climate movement, and to have them attack him, it's just senseless. And he gets attacked a lot, but I think one of the things that he said in a letter is that this is hard because it's people who, you know, are environmentalists. And I think that kind of actually gets at some of the hardest part, the most hard to digest part of this movie, is that it's coming from a point of basically presenting ideas from one idea. This is an author said it this way, presenting ideas from one ideological cluster into the world of another. So it's bringing some of these far right climate denier myths into the left wing, the circle of left wing environmentalists from 2020. And, this author also said that it's basically like a dumb old bull in the China shop that is 2020's hard earned climate action environment. Right. And I think that's apt. All of this stuff, all of these disgusting lies that are being pulled into this movie are ancient. They're very old. They've been debunked. They're myths that don't exist because either the technology's come really far or they just were never actually accurate anyway. And he's pulling them back into this place where we're actually starting to get some momentum with climate change and getting some momentum with, the paradigm shift needed to get people on board with the movement. And that's why it's a dumb old bull in a China shop, because everything's so delicate. And here comes this awful movie from pretty much the side of progressives. Well, but it's also coming from the side of progressives, which, it's all about having a trusted messenger. And if the trusted messenger is delivering a false message that people are buying, that's very, very dangerous.
And I think it's,
to your,
go ahead.
I was going to say, Mariah, to your point about McKibben, there are two points. Number one, when I mentioned the stylistic similarities, what they did to McKibben to use innuendo to accuse him of corruption with no actual evidence, the exact same thing Moore did to Hillary Clinton in the documentary Sicko, where there's a bunch of innuendo he throws out to try to accuse Hillary Clinton, then as a senator from New York State, of being, you know, a stooge for the pharmaceutical industry, but no actual evidence there and no actual evidence of corruption introduced against McKibben, number one. And number two, to the point about being a trusted voice, I think this now forces, and in some of the reviews and some of the discussion about it, it now forces a lot of people to sort of look back at the previous incidents in Moore's films where he engaged in deception, and it, going all the way back to Roger and Me. In fact, Pauline Kael of The New Yorker did this great, great review back in 1989 about Roger and Me, pointing out all the dishonesty in that film, and she accused the film of what she called, quote, gonzo demagoguery. And I thought that phrase, gonzo demagoguery, is the perfect description of this film. That there's this 30-year history of Moore never allowing facts to get in the way of an argument. And he has this sort of conspiracy theory mindset, the sort of diseased mindset that clean energy is the citadel of corruption. And he won't let anything get in the way of that. And because McKibben, with his moral integrity, stands in the way of that, he has to throw slime upon McKibben. Like, you know, a dishonest person can never recognize honesty in somebody else. It's pure projection. They have to see the same dishonesty in their own souls. They have to see it in somebody else. And that's why you see this vicious and vile and sleazy attack on McKibben in this film.
McKibben responded on his website too, and he said he said, "I've never taken a penny in pay from 350.org or from any other environmental group." He says, "Instead, I've donated hundreds of thousands of dollars over the years in honoraria and prizes." But then he also says that 350.org has never taken corporate money, and that it has no financial interest in the campaigns it runs to clear our financial system of dirty fossil fuels. So, you know, he pushed back. He also said, I tried to contact Moore and they wouldn't get back to me," which is, you know, that's flawed journalism right there, right? Mm-hmm. If you're attacking someone in a movie, but you won't, I know they interviewed him a little bit for the movie, but it sounds like he tried to sort of clear up some of the things they were accusing him of, and they wouldn't engage with him.
I mean, the only interview that I saw of Bill McKibben in the movie by the director was what I believe is a clip from 2014. So I don't think there's any real Bill McKibben looks 6 years younger, right? And so I find But Mariah, I guess to go back to your original point, I mean, the trusted messenger that's lying is very damaging, because I've had people that are generally sympathetic to the climate movement say, "Oh, look at this terrible movie. Isn't this awful?" Right? What accepting the premise of the movie, right, which is the very damaging thing, because now you spend all your time fighting back against these charges that, as you say, are 10 years old. I mean, which is why the argument I make is that the movie is journalistically flawed, just in terms of telling the truth and having a legitimate credibility for giving a good story. It fails on that. So that means the whole thing is delegitimized. I mean, you can't believe anything that the guy's done in the movie. I think that the perspective that the movie is shot from is all a guy who looks an awful lot like Michael Moore, right? 55, balding, white guy, right? That's it. There's no kids, no people of color. There's nobody from the global south. There's nobody but that. And there's very few women, right? And there's certainly no women. And just, okay, so the whole movie is, you know, Michael Moore looking in a mirror filming himself, right? So tell me this. So here, I have heard it said that there is some value because the movie tiptoes up to the issues of biomass, which I think most climate hawks would say is a bad idea, right? We need to get rid of that. It tiptoes up to the idea of the exploitation of less developed countries to get these exotic materials that are needed for renewable energy, along with your cell phone. But I mean, you do need funny things. I mean, there's the whole question of embedded energy, right? We need to educate people about the fact that there, it does take energy to make a solar panel, right? And sometimes that energy, you know, to the extent that you haven't got solar panels everywhere, some of that energy could be dirty. But the net gain in clean energy production is huge, right? And so, do you guys...
way less embedded carbon in making a solar panel than trying to, you know, run a grid off of coal, right? I mean, way less.
Right. And so, I mean, did you see anything like any topics that should be discussed and are being discussed, but of course were distorted by Michael Moore? But I mean, what should people think about things like exploitation and biomass and stuff?
Well, 2 points. First of all, in some of the criticisms of the film, it's been pointed out that a large portion of the climate movement, including Bill McKibben, they abandoned any sort of support for biomass years ago, going back all the way back to the mid-2010s, and yet the movie purports that it's some sort of new thing that all of a sudden people have started raising questions about biomass, so it's dishonest and deceptive in that sense. And number two, I think there was a tweet by Naomi Klein in which she said that, you know, there is a documentary to be made about, you know, exploitation and sort of the trade-offs we make in terms of creating a clean energy future, but this film is not it. Right. And again, the sort of moral cancer this introduces into the body of democracy about this film, it's now had at least 3 million views. Three million people who, if they don't know the facts of the film, are going to say, well, we don't need a Green New Deal. A Green New Deal is just gonna be a corrupt thing to make a lot of people rich, and it won't do anything to protect us. The amount of damage and intentional damage. I was discussing this with a friend of mine the other day, and I said, you know, people in our generation, we look back and we look at horrible films like Triumph of the Will by Leni Riefenstahl or Birth of a Nation by D.W. Griffith, and we say, how can people intentionally use their talents in the service of evil? The evil those two films represent. I think future generations are going to look back at this film and say the exact same thing. I really do.
Why?
They're going to wonder how could somebody use their talent to advance this? I think my term was apocalyptic nihilism. How can they use such talent in the service of such malevolence? It's sickening.
Yeah, I mean, do we have any idea why Moore would do this?
Conspiracy.
What's his motivation?
He's a conspiracy theorist. That's all the motivation you need. He sees evil and corruption in every leaf that falls, basically. That's his mentality. Mm. And it's always been his mentality.
So that's a good question. So, I mean, let me follow up on that. I guess I have been perhaps naively thinking that Michael Moore has been a voice of exposing some level of truth. And then I'm shocked in that when this movie about a topic I'm familiar with turns out to be wildly deceptive. What you're saying, DR, is that in fact there's a through line of the conspiracy and deception, which means we need to go back and look at everything he said about George W. Bush and whatever that movie was and the various expose type movies. I mean, there's a lot of them. You said Sicko about Hillary Clinton. Would you stand by that statement that this is continuous with the rest of his career?
Yes, and in fact, if you look at Brendan Nyhan, there's a writer named Brendan Nyhan who's written extensively about the various conspiracy theories and, to use Rachel Maddow's term, bullpucky, that was in Michael Moore's book Stupid White Men, Dude, Where's My Country, and also Bowling for Columbine and Fahrenheit 9/11. A.O. Scott of the New York Times in 2002 wrote a review in which he discussed the falsehoods that were in Bowling for Columbine. There was a writer, along with Pauline Kael, Harlan Jacobson, a film comment who in 1989 wrote about the explicit falsehoods in Roger and Me. There's this long through line of conspiracy theory and fraudulence advanced by Moore. And there are other, you know, progressive-minded documentary filmmakers who don't have the credibility issues Moore has. Look at the guy Robert Greenwald or the woman Barbara Kumble, I believe her name is, who directed Harlan County, USA. There are a lot of progressive filmmakers out there who get their facts right and make sure their facts are straight and have a fidelity to the truth that Moore has never demonstrated his entire career. So this is simply the natural evolution of a career of playing fast and loose with facts and seeing conspiracies around every corner. If you look at McKibben and you see some evil, corrupt billionaire, and here's something, and it was Leah Stokes in Vox who noted that the movie never discusses the climate denial movement, the fossil fuel industry, and its financing of it. But here's another example of the deception at the heart of this movie in terms of its attack on McKibben. Do you notice the movie never once acknowledges McKibben's support or friendship with Bernie Sanders? Now, if the, you know, and it's obvious why, because if you acknowledge that McKibben's a friend of Sanders, why would a guy like Sanders, having spent an entire political career condemning the machinations of the 1%, be a pal of a guy who's engaged in 1% style deception? If he acknowledged that McKibben was a friend of Sanders and supportive of Sanders, the entire premise of this film would fall apart to the ground. And it shows you how much of a liar and a shameless liar Moore and Gibbs are by not acknowledging the friendship between McKibben and Sanders. The entire film is crap.
Wow. I hear you. I mean that's an excellent point. I mean I agree with you. I mean the sort of flippant joke I was going to say was that they didn't have a videotape of McKibben and Bernie Sanders together in 2009, so that's why it didn't get in the movie, because they only used 10-year-old clips. Oh man, but that's a good point. I mean, I you're right. I mean, the treatment. I mean, Bill McKibben is today, you know, just got arrested, not today, but recently in the lobby of the Chase Manhattan Bank, right? For and so is that, that makes him a stooge of capitalism. I think. There's so many loaded issues here that people should be aware of when they walk in. So when in the movie there's a discussion of population control, which just makes my head explode, because the irony and the lack of perspective for anybody in the United States to advocate for population control, it almost by definition means you're talking about, you know, brown people south of the equator, their population needs to be managed, right? I mean, that's the subtext. And then it gets you into all sorts of neo-fascist, I mean, all this ugly, ugly, ugly stuff, right? I mean, is that a fair statement?
It's a subtle argument in favor of ethnic cleansing, basically.
That's essentially what
it's arguing.
Because those people are keeping us from having the kind of lifestyle where, I mean,
I'm going to say again, don't go see it. Don't support the movie. Do not watch it. Don't give it any eyeballs. Don't give it any more clicks.
Don't give it any more clicks.
Make it just go away. I mean, right? If nobody had watched it, it wouldn't have any impact.
The film is literally a rotten tomato.
Yeah. A bad apple.
Well, let's do this. I will give you both. If you can, if you had your say, we'll stop. Then we're going to take two deep breaths, because this movie is so enraging. Our audience, I mean, if the audience has seen it, you have to sort of protect yourself from the lies and the dysfunction. Any closing comments from you guys, or have you talked yourselves out?
Two thumbs down.
Two thumbs down. All right, take a deep breath now.
Go McKibben. That's what I'm going to say.
All right.
We heart Bill McKibben. That's right.
All right, well, look, guys, thank you very much for taking the time. And I really respect you for taking the time to delve into what is a painful issue and what is a very upsetting thing to have this kind of stuff out there. I hope that we've enlightened some of our listeners to some of the background on this. It is out there. You can't avoid it, but don't believe it. Right. All right, so what I'm going to do is I will put up a link to some of the critiques of this thing. If you want to see, as Mariah says, if you want to see the movie, you're going to have to find it yourself on YouTube. I'm not going to put up a link to it. The links will be on the blog at massclimateaction.org/blog. If you have a question about that movie or anything else, you can send us a letter to podcast@massclimateaction.net. You can listen to us on your smartphone using any of the modern podcast distribution apps. And it says here, but I'm going to say in person, we want to thank DR Tucker, because DR sends us regularly links and things that we ought to be thinking about in planning our show, and we're deeply grateful for it. So thanks, DR. We want to close where we always close it, saying we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. So we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our collective future. So, Mariah, thank you so much for being here.
Always a pleasure.
DR, thank you so much for coming back. We really appreciate you.
Thanks.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.